It'll be fine.
I'm excited to, you know, I guess watch this since I'll be forced to.
Watch what?
Wazoo.
Oh, the Oregon State game?
Yeah. I don't know.
That should be interesting. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a good game. Again, you know, I've said about 100 times since this segment started about 10 minutes ago, but...
Yeah, I wish I could have more to say. I mean, I didn't watch the game.
It was, you know, by... What I saw in the first half was probably the most dominant front seven I've seen at Wazoo that I can remember watching. And that's saying something. I mean, the talent isn't nowhere as good as it was in 07, 06, 05, the years I really clearly remember. But that front seven, even though it kind of looked, I mean, the problem with the defense is their secondary. If the secondary was okay,
yeah,
the Colorado debacle doesn't happen.
Well, then Leach cut two of our best secondaries at the beginning of the season.
No, he cut two of our better front seven guys, two linebackers. The front seven would be the defensive line and the linebackers. If you're in a 3-4.
I thought, what's his name, the one that got caught?
Kafusi was a linebacker.
Oh, I thought he was a safety or...
And so was Mizell.
Just kidding.
So, no, the secondary is completely intact from last year. This is the same. It's the same starting guys as last season. So
they looked way better last season than they do this season.
I wouldn't argue that at all. But according to some of the advanced sabermetrics, which I don't get for football, I'm starting to understand some of the baseball ones. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But there's some. I don't understand it. But most of them actually have the defense right about where it was last year, at the end of last year, and the team as a whole is at about the same level. Despite all of our losses.
I disagree a little.
Well, you can't.
I feel like the team's way worse off this year than they were last year.
I think their mentality's worse, definitely. But I don't, like, statistically speaking, it's about on par with where we were at the end of last year.
Even if given up how many touchdowns? Because remember, our first three games last year were.
Well, are we the only ones allowed to improve? Can't UNLV and. Eastern, you can't really talk about Eastern because Eastern's always does this. Eventually, Eastern's just going to take all these body bag game paychecks and just.
Can UNLV get that much better in 1 year?
Well, you have to remember the quarterback did have an offer from Colorado. So it's not like he didn't have more Division I offers, BCS level offers. He actually committed to Colorado only to get cut. Now, I'm betting, you know, John Embry is going, I should have kept him. Because he still looked pretty good. I mean, he hasn't looked horrible like the quarterback UNLV started against us last year. I mean, that's probably the biggest difference between UNLV last year and this year is
definitely.
The quarterback is
definitely
100 times better. And against our secondary,
yeah,
as I said,
really
are we the only ones allowed to improve? I don't know why they're so bad. You thought they would learn from some of their mistakes last year. But I guess not.
Nah, they just coug it.
Yeah. I don't like that term, but if that term's going to go away,
the term,
they have to stop doing
term.
That. I don't like it. But if that term is going to disappear,
the
team has to stop
disappear.
Doing
it's
it.
It's just the cougar thing. Coug it. No, just give BYU maybe can adopt it.
By the way, when we do get Bill Moose in here eventually, don't use that term around him.
Oh, I will.
Don't recommend it.
All right. That slips out, Neil. No promises. Okay.
he might go into a lecture. Floyd did that to me. I was in his office, and I'm like, well, the UW athletic department, you know, they're self-sufficient. They don't tap into the general funds. How much does Wazoo tap? This is one of the questions I asked Floyd last year when I was in his office. So how much does Wazoo tap, you know, athletic department tap for scholarships from the general fund? And Floyd looked at me, and he's like, you do realize that no athletic department plays for the land their stadiums are built on. They don't pay for the water bills. They don't pay for the electricity bills. That's coming from the school's general fund. I'm like, okay. So basically Floyd's point is that no athletic department is self-sufficient. Which is kind of funny considering how much we hear about.
Yeah. Prices.
the UW athletic department being self-sufficient. And USC's in, you know, some. I'm not just singling out UW. It's what they talk about, but they don't pay for it. It comes out of the university's electricity and land funds. So it's not like...
I might as well put it all in one bill besides, like...
Yeah, it's why divide it, so... Sorry, guys. Hate to burst your bubble there, guys. You know, you SoCal and UW fans. So, anyway, there's that. Again, our conclusion, the Cougs played better than expected. Defense looked a lot better. Offense looked a lot better. We'll see how that adds up in Corvallis.
Hopefully they keep it up.
If they can stay in, we'll talk about that a little later, but if you're in it late in the game, anything can happen. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about the Mariners moving the fences in at Safeco Field. You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. Stay tuned.
stairway to heaven.
You're listening to Sports in the Hill on Cougar College Radio. So, they finally decided to do it, Gib.
Yeah, move the fences in over here in Safeco.
It needed to be done. The ballpark was big during the steroid era, and the steroids kind of started disappearing from the system.
And now...
it's a cavern. It's where hitters go to die.
Yeah, what... you told me earlier that's one of the deepest
fields. It's one of the largest ballparks in the majors, yeah. It is the largest ballpark in the majors. I know Petco looks like it, but, you know, yeah. Petco's 390 out to center.
Yeah, it's 390 out to center at Safeco.
It's 390 out to left center. Dead center at Petco is only 390 feet. It's when you start getting into the power alleys that Petco's huge.
Left center.
Safeco Field, however, the left field power alley... is yep. The deepest part of the it's not the deepest part of the ballpark, but it's probably the most infamous.
Is it
for especially for young Justin Smoke? I can straight off the top of my head, I can see three plays
where Justin
where
Smoke
hit it right out to the warning track, out there in left center in front of the pen.
It just dropped.
Dropped. The ball hung up in the air and it dropped. Like a rock into the... it hangs up there, gives the fielder enough time to get under it, and you catch it.
Oh, finally, you know, the walls are moving in.
It needed to happen. The numbers at Safeco have been absolutely atrocious over the last decade.
So it's not all the Mariners. It's the field.
It's the stadium. It's Safeco, I think, in the last 5 years, I was reading an article. I think it was a Mariners article. It's been averaging like 8-3 runs a ball game for the road team, 3.3 for the home team. You know, that's just average at Safeco.
Yeah.
That was this year.
See,
this year, as we talked about earlier, Safeco's played so weird this year. I think this year was kind of the catalyst for this. This decision needed to be done. And I think how weird Safeco played this year
just finally was like, the final right, the straw. We got to put these fences in closer.
And the straw that broke the camel's back, correct?
Yeah.
So
when they originally designed Safeco, they made it, you know, for Alex Rodriguez and Ken Griffey Jr.
They didn't, like...
or not necessarily made it, but, you know, they kind of did.
Built it for their guy, them, because A-Rod liked to pull it at the time. A-Rod liked to pull it down the left field line. That's why it's only 331 feet out to the foul pole. Only about 350. Here, let me pull up the chart, but I think it's like 340-something out to the hand-operated scoreboard.
Yeah. And
341 to the hand-operated scoreboard.
341.
So that was A-Rod's butter spot back then. And then obviously, I've talked about it before on the show last year and a little bit this year. Right field's one of the shallowest in the league.
Yeah, 381?
Yeah. Well, no, as of now, like the whole right field wall from foul pole to about right center field is the shallowest in Major League Baseball. So why don't you hit right center to left field all the way to the left field foul pole? So the current 385 marker.
Yeah.
From the current 385 marker to the 341 for the hand-operated scoreboard,
mm-hmm.
The deepest part of the ballpark is the deepest in the that area is the deepest in the major leagues.
So we have the shallowest and the deepest.
Yes. And obviously right field was built for Griffey. And one of the interesting things to come out of Art Thiel's book, Out of Left Field, How the Mariners Made Baseball Fly in Seattle, was a story that is a promo when Safeco Field was still under construction before they put in the actual outfield walls. So all they had were the seating bowl, basically.
Yeah.
They had A-Rod and Griffey come and do a kind of home run derby-esque thing.
Did you see how far I put the wall back?
No, it was just a promo thing to say, here's the new ballpark, here's our players playing in the new ballpark. and to show the new players the players the new ballpark anyway.
Yeah.
And it was too big. Griffey and A-Rod couldn't do anything. They had trouble. I mean, obviously it was winter, so it was really frigging cold.
Yeah, and in the Pacific Northwest. That pushes the ball down already.
It's heavier air, and it's and then you add in the fact that there's a 5-foot difference currently between the seats and the wall because there's that trench there, so fans don't get in and interfere.
Yeah, it's even
and the ballpark
trench.
Played huger than it already did, and it was already going to play big for the steroid era.
Yeah.
So. No, it's something that needed to be done. I think Justin Smoke is probably the most infamous case. He's had many home runs go die in that 390, 409, that between the 390 and 490 marker, because it gets held up in the wind coming off of the out in through the left field area. Some people would suggest off of the Royal Brougham overpass, although my dad's friend who's an architect thinks that theory is complete bunk. He says it's bunk, but you know there's a dip in numbers. I mean, for the Mariners, before the overpass started construction, 2008, the first 101 loss season at Safeco, the BAP, which is the batting average on balls put in hit by a batter between the foul lines, so balls put in play.
Yeah.
So the BAP, batting average on that was 299. Since the overpass, construction on the overpass was started, it's dipped to 231.
That's a far drop over a couple
of years. And there is arguably less hitting talent on the Mariners in 2008 than there is on the Mariners now.
Mm. Why would an overpass make such a big difference?
I don't know. That's why Adam Clark, my dad's friend who's an architect, thinks it's bunk. The overpass is too low and stuff for it to really affect how the wind flows into the ballpark.
Yeah.
But then there's that huge drop in numbers.
Maybe the Mariners just are not as good as they once were, or they stopped taking steroids.
The steroids, but that was only 4 years ago. The steroid over was...
Overall, no, a long time ago.
By the mid, by 04, 05 is when the steroid era really came crashing to a halt.
Yeah. Remember those?
Because the Mitchell Report ran in 2003, if I remember correctly.
Well, so the walls moving in, isn't that, can that also be a negative effect towards the Mariners? Because the way teams, they already have better players.
Well, for Jason, I mean, the only pitcher on the Mariners staff I can really think of this affecting would be Jason Vargas, who's known for as a fly ball pitcher, and who's frankly abused that 390 marker to 409 area, so left center to dead center field. He's just frequently pitched it so that the batters have, you know, it's the area the batters frequently hit. He's a fly ball pitcher. And earlier this year when people started grumbling about the walls needing to move in because of the way Safeco is playing and stuff, Vargas was asked what he thought about this. I got to find this article because it's a great quote. And basically what he said was, if it helps us score more runs and therefore win more ball games, I'm all for it. I'll just have to retool how I pitch a little bit. I mean, I'm paraphrasing on his quote a little bit there, but that's the gist of what he said is, I have to do better.
That's good. It's a good mental or, no, good way to think about it, basically. It's...
Felix also supports the whole thing, and obviously Felix doesn't give up that many home runs. And the ones he does are pretty much, you know, they're gone anywhere you play, whether it's Safeco Field or the little band box called Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
They're gone no matter what when you hit one off of Felix just because of how hard he throws the ball.
Yeah. No, he throws fast, and people get that fastball, and the faster the fastball is, and you hit it.
Right. It's going to go bye-bye.
That's physics. Considering that, like, our team, as this is my opinion, our teams, you know, we're not one of the better, stronger teams in the MLB.
No.
I mean.
But Jesus Montero and Justin Smoke are two of the more prominent guys who like to hit the ball out into that left center area.
Yeah, but.
And, you know, it's hard to do
that. Every other team's going to have, you know, their big hitters. playing for them, and they come visit here, and now that field's shallower. And just like you said, Vargas has changed his whole style. He has to change his whole style.
Not entirely. He's just got to tweak his
stop guys
a few
from hitting
things, but
long
yeah,
fly balls.
Just throw lower, and that, I mean, that's you can do that over spring training. You've seen, you
it's
can,
easier
you,
said than done, though. I mean, just think Vargas has been
very
doing his pitching style his whole life.
Compared to most other pitching problems you see, though, this is a very small one and probably one of the easier fixes you're going to see. But, I mean, it is. It's a very valid point, Gib. I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know. The real reason they're doing this is because Adrian Beltre, you know, his experience here scared the holy living crap out of hitters. He went from a guy who was hitting right around 300, and that's the regular batting average. I was talking about BABIP earlier, but I'm not. I don't have his stats looking at it now. He's hitting the mid to high 290s.
Mm-hmm.
He was hitting 30 to 40 home runs, knocking in about 100 RBIs at Dodger Stadium, which itself is not a small ballpark. But it's not as cavernous as Safeco.
Yeah.
And he got to here, and all of a sudden he goes from a 295 hitter, let's say, to 250. His home runs drop off from the 30s to the 20s. His RBIs drop off from the 100 to the 70s. You're not going to tell me.
Well, maybe all the Mariners should adapt to the Ichiro style, which was don't try to hit home runs, go for a base hit. You know?
Even in 2001 when they had that, you know, 116 win year, they still had two guys hit 30 home runs in that lineup. Edgar hit 20 something, was in the mid 20s. They still had guys who were consistently producing home runs, which you need.
Also, we're a better team all in all. Like,
well, I
as
mean,
a whole versus now. You have to compare the two teams.
There's
if you
a great article by Larry Stone,
stats.
And it talks a lot about the mental abuse that ballpark is. That's the team's problem, and I've said this all along. Remember we talked about this last year, is I think the ballpark's in their heads.
Possible.
It's a young enough team that happens.
Yeah, I don't have these stats up, but maybe you'll know them, but the win-loss records of home games and away games for the Mariners. You know, they're going and traveling to away, smaller stadiums, and if they're used to Safeco being able to, like, have to hit this 390 feet to get my home run, and when they go to the away games, they'll be like, they probably saw the mentality to hit that, and so they should be able to hit the home runs to the 378, or however deep any other field is.
They've had to change their swings for the ballpark, though. That's one of the things Montero's talked about, Smokes talked about, is that their swings changed upon their initial arrival in Seattle to play to the ballpark. That's just as bad. That's pretty much the same thing as making a pitcher totally go from an overhand to a sidearm. You just can't do that. And you were talking about the home win-loss records. I actually wrote a blog post analyzing those for the Jack Z era, so the 4 years the Mariners were, you know, Jack Z's been the general manager in Seattle. Their home record in 2009, 48 and 33. Home record in 2010 when they lost 101 ball games and 161. So overall, they're 61 and 101. At home, they were 35 and 46. 2011, 39 and 45. 2012, 40 and 41. But on the same note, their road records, 37 and 44 for 2009, 26 and 55 for 2010, 28 and 50 for 2011, and 35 and 46 for 2012.
Okay, so is it the field? Like, do you honestly think that the field is the thing that is making the Mariners not do well?
I don't think it's the stadium itself.
But you think they change their swing, they have to.
I think it's the psychological. Even Larry Stone flat out, here, let me pull that quote up because it's great. From Larry Stone's articles, Mariners even feel excited about fence coming in. There's a great quote near the top. Here it is. It's talking about how beneficial, some of the benefits of having the fences come in. And here's the first one that Larry... This is literally the first one Larry Stone list. The first is assuaging the young battered psyches of the young Mariners hitters, beaten down by too many well-struck blasts which screen home run off the bat, only to die a maddening death at the warning track.
Okay.
That's the primary reason they're doing this.
I understand that, but then also if you look at their win-loss records, home and away,
the
we have losing records in both places, And I think
homes,
if they have to get used to before, it's already good that they're shortening the fences. But I just think, like, I don't think all of their losses and stuff has to do with the field necessarily, maybe a small portion. But I also think maybe because our field is so big that it could help us with the away games. You know, they're like, keep that swing. It's a baseball field.
It's,
you got to hit it. And it, other fields are shallower, and you don't have to – you can hit it as hard as you would at Safeco. And then with that, more likely it's going to be a home run.
But if you're
– 17 feet closer.
If you're sitting there and you're like, okay, I just hit a ball 389 feet, and I'm out. I mean, as we were talking about, the biggest problem is the wind coming out of left field, which is for some reason – suppressed all power, especially since 2008, suppressed the power coming out of there, coming out towards left field. Balls that used to be home runs towards left field have dropped, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, it's, well, this is, you know, especially since 08, I mean, this year was building. And if you go and look at BAPIP for the teams coming in and the Mariners, it's been building towards 2012, where, you know, we saw the three no-hitters and two of them being perfect games, and a complete and utter offensive collapse on both sides of the field and both dugouts, the home and the away dugout.
Well,
it's been building.
Well, yeah, okay, well, you just said, like, just a moment ago, like, a guy hits 389 feet, and no, he's going to be out. That's Safeco. He's out. However, bring this to Anaheim or Oakland, that's a home run.
Oakland's left center field's bigger than Safeco. All
right, he's hitting it. Okay,
Oakland's probably the one ballpark I can think of that's close to or bigger than Safeco.
Scratch out Oakland. All right, try Anaheim or Texas then. All right, okay, guy hits 389 feet towards left center, and Safeco, he's out, and those stadiums, home run. That's the difference between an out and a run.
But here's what you also have to consider, and this is going to be the last point I make before we go to break. We'll pick this up after the break as well, because it's a good debate. But if you for 81 home games, you're hitting the ball 389 feet, and it's getting caught for an out, your psychology is going to be, no matter what I do, no matter how hard I hit it, no matter what I do, I'm going to get out.
So why not still try to hit it as hard as you can?
But the same thing as bashing your head against a wall. When you're sitting there and working on a particularly hard math problem at home and you keep getting the answer wrong, what do you end up saying?
Well, yeah, I suck at math.
Well, but it's the same thing, but it's still the same principle, basically. It's, you start bashing, you're doing it and doing it and doing it again, and
no,
finally you're like,
her.
You know what? Screw math, I'm done. For them, it's screw hitting, I'm done. And, I mean, that's a problem.
To counter that real fast, so if we're talking about, okay, I'm in a really different math problem. Now let's say that, all right, I have this equation. All right, it's that equation. This one problem has really hard numbers, you know, a lot of fractions and just tons of extra steps you have to do, versus another one where it's just solid, easy, like, easy numbers. All right, I'm going to solve that problem that has easy numbers way easier than the equation that has tons of fractions and decimals.
But on the same note, if those problems are the hard problems, because that's how usually math teachers and programs like to stack it, are at the beginning, you're just going to be so fatigued by math, but by the time you get to the easy problems, you're going to be overthinking it.
However,
and that's the Mariners' problem, is they're overthinking it when they get to the other ballparks. Let's pick this up on the other side of the debate. We went at this for a half an hour, Gib. Excuse me, 20 minutes, not a half an hour, but still, we did 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's go to a break. We'll pick it up again, because this is good. You're listening to Sports in the Along, Cougar College Radio. Stay tuned.
Give a firm handshake. Talk to me. it all in place. Work your way right into my face. First you try to bend me and make my backbone slide. But when you find you bend me, skip on by, keep on.
You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. We were debating the walls, Gib, but before we do that, here's a reminder, guys. We do have a threat, open thread up on the blog for the show. You can post any comments you have about the show and any questions you have for either of the hosts, me or Gibson, and we will do our best to read them on air and answer them to the best of our abilities. The blog's address is sportswithneil.blogspot.com. Go ahead and post any questions or comments. Anyway, back to our good debate beforehand.
On the
walls at Safeco
Field and how it's doing, you know, for the Mariners and et cetera.
Real quick, K-U-G-R Pullman. Go.
Okay, so as we were saying earlier, you know, I personally think that not necessarily this field has to do with the Mariners' win-loss records. I mean, a little, but
it's
I
more
think
the offensive
if anything,
production
this field should
about.
Actually help them out. Only because
because
they're getting this mental aspects going. Okay, I have to hit it this amount of feet. Okay, it's not getting there. I'm going to get out. Sure, it'll mess with their psychological aspects of the game. And but either way, they're going to know I still have to hit far. Why don't they just use that same swing they use in Seattle, bring it over to away games? You're still using that same swing. You're still going to hit. Let's just say the guy's still hitting 389 feet. That's the difference between a run and an out everywhere
it's
else.
The difference, again, it's the psychology.
So why aren't
it's
they getting
bashing
more home
your
runs?
Head.
No,
they are.
Why aren't they getting more home
they
runs
are.
In away games?
They had 149 this year. 54 of them were at Safeco Field.
Okay.
Out of 149 home runs, 54 of them were
exactly.
at Safeco Field. And they would have, you know, if you listen to some sources the Mariners, and read some sources, the Mariners could have had, with the new dimensions, the Mariners would have had 21 more home runs at Safeco this year. Other sources say 16, 17, and anywhere between.
Yeah, okay, that is enough to move them up in the rankings, you know.
But
in
offensive
blog,
production
you wrote...
and, you know, winning as well. You know, wins. And, I mean, Vargas did a lot better job this year of keeping, you know, more ground ball outs and getting out of jams that way. Granted, he's at Safeco Field, he's an excellent pitcher, and away from Safeco Field, he's an average one. Whereas the year before, it was Vargas was a decent pitcher at Safeco Field, and he was a way below average on the road in 2010. Or excuse me, 11. He's getting better. He's adapting. Now he's an average pitcher on the road. His WAR is zero. WAR being the wins above replacement, replacement being AAA team, and the belief being that a AAA team wins 45 games a year. So if you're, you know, you're that value to your team, you know, it's 45 plus however many games you think they think that one player could contribute to their team.
No.
On the road, Vargas WAR is right around zero. That's what it was last year. So, I mean, he's a young pitcher, too. He is adapting and changing. I mean, he was about minus three the year before. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's improving. And so that's the thing. He understands this.
Of course.
He's being, you know, he's, as a young pitcher, he's adapting. That's what you want to see in a player. So it's not, I mean, obviously, okay, it's, he's not going to be as good as he was at Safeco Field last year, this year, past season.
Yeah. Because, yeah,
but he's still going to be, but he's understood that this is probably coming.
All right, now, but the main thing, the reason they're moving in the walls is more for the hitters, not the pitchers.
Yes. But my point is that you have pitchers in Felix and in Vargas who are like, yeah, we want this. We want run support, and we can adapt to pitch at a field that's a little bit smaller. I think before, you know, I think, you know, in some ways people are thinking, oh, it's going to turn it into a bandbox. No, it's not. It's still going to be one of the larger parks in Major League Baseball. But, I mean, as the assistant general manager put it, oh, God, what's his face? I forgot his name. Hold on, I've almost got it. Anyway, he's like, basically Safeco Field is an outlier right now. Once I find his name, I'll tell you. But basically Safeco Field is an outlier right now. It's out in the, you know, it's 30. We want to push it more towards 20. So it's not like it's going to be, you know, at a major league ballpark's friendly, you know, hitter friendly factoring. It's not like it's going to still, it's not like it's going to turn into a tiny little ballpark and, you know, balls are going to be flying out of it left and right. It's still going to be a pitcher park. It's just not going to be the pitcher's park.
Yeah. But, well, that's just the thing for the hitters, you know. The Mariners aren't the best
here it
team.
Is.
I know
the guy's name is Kingston. I think it's Jeff King. It is Jeff Kingston. Here's his exact quote. But rather than being an outlier or 28th, 29th in offense, we think we'll be closer to, say, 20th. So the idea is to help, you know, it's not only to make the ballpark play a little smaller, make it, you know, bring it a little bit more towards major league average and make it more fair. They're looking at it, and they're like, we can bump ourselves 8-9 spots in offense, and who knows with our pitching staff how many more wins that equates to.
Yeah, or I don't know, it could be even losses. I
it
mean,
could
the,
be.
Like, if
but
if
I
we're
mean,
going by the psychological aspects, you know, the pitchers here are going, okay, we can give up a couple huge pop flies because like, most
they
likely
can still can. It's
most, major put, most major leaguers can't hit home runs in our park.
Cause we out to that them. Area. Because
yeah.
As I said, right field is the shallowest in the league.
Yeah, and now they're probably going to go up there, be kind of a little cockiness and throw it. Oh, that's a hit. Oh, I'm fine. That's not. Okay, just kidding.
I mean, they're moving
the field
in.
Field moved in 17 feet.
Right. They're only moving right center, left center field in 17 feet. The rest of the ballpark's only moving in 4, so it's not like they're moving. And the only reason they're doing that is to keep the geometry of the field as it is now.
Yeah. I mean, you got to do that. They have to move in.
They have to move in some of it to make the geometry fit.
Otherwise, that field will look like a little triangle in the back, basically.
It'll be a triangle cut between. Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. But it's not, as I said, they're not making it a complete hitter's park. And, you know, we saw this year the offense bumped a little bit from, I think it was 30th the previous year before, to I think about 28th is where they finished in, you know, runs and runs scored, home runs and hits and that kind of thing. Overall, their offense is right about 28th. And they've won 8 more games by bumping 2 spots. So,
sorry.
It's probably more than likely going to equate to more wins. Plus, who doesn't love a little more offense?
It's true.
So.
And I know, like, one of the reasons, another reason that they want to make the field closer is because they want to draw bigger names here and bigger hitters, so also improve our team itself. But every other,
I mean,
feel,
this is
like,
you know, pitchers' parks all over the league have been moving in their fences in now. City Field did it last year after last season. You know, I saw the fence moved in fence at City Field.
Yeah,
and they took advantage of it to make a party deck and expand the bullpens a little bit.
I personally, if I was a coach, considering that, you know, not every field is the same and what, and you know what, not.
That's one of the great things about baseball too.
Mariners, that is a great thing. You know,
it's the field. Every field is different.
Yes.
There's no, you know, none of the dimensions are the same except for the diamond.
Like football is like what, 50 by 100?
Yeah. Soccer is whatever. It's
120 yards.
Yeah. And basketball, hockey, they're all regulation size rinks.
Yeah.
They compete at those levels. Baseball, it's like, make sure your corners are 300 feet or more. Have fun.
Yeah. But especially if, maybe one thing the Mariners themselves could do a little different over these past years, since Safeco used to have the longest yard or the furthest out walls
out in that area.
Maybe the Mariners should have, practice not for home runs. Been like Ichiro, practice for base hits.
Well, they did that. They tried that for a decade, Gib. That led to, since 2003, we've had two winning seasons during the era where they tried to go pitching and defense only. Granted, Bill Bavese was dumb about it.
I'm not. You're saying pitching defense. No, like, instead
pitching
of,
defense and offense.
Because a swing between power hitter and an Ichiro style, just a guy who wants to hit, totally different. You know, the big power hitters will lean back a little more, put some more oomph in it, and they usually, those guys are hit or miss. Basically, those are either big, huge hits or miss the ball because they power swinged it too hard. And then you got those other hitters who can just like hit basically anything, but they're not going to go far. They're going to be grounders or line drives, which is what you want. Base hits. And I think base hits over, you know, home runs will win a game.
They've tried that. I mean, that was the idea of the Figgins-Ichiro deal. And I mean, you still need a big bopper in the lineup. Otherwise, they're just going to...
Of course. You need the big boy out
You're not going to get a big bopper with Safeco Field at its current dimensions, which is why they're moving them in.
And if they were more of a team strategized and just hitting shallow balls...
That's what the idea was. I mean, but they thought they could grab smoke. They didn't project Kyle Seager to be a 20-home run guy. Let alone here we are with him being the only 20-home run guy on the Mariners. That being said, they've tried that. They drafted Ackley. They drafted Seager. They got these guys who can hit the singles and doubles. And they're having issues because balls that would be off of fences at other balls, it's not just the home runs that are getting. Balls that would be off of fences are in a line drive off a fence at another ballpark. They're still in the field of play, and they're getting caught.
That's one of the biggest effects. In a smaller field anyway.
No, because a lot of the balls that they hit now that, you know, get caught on the diving catches into the outfield, those would be off the top of the wall in the new ballpark and at many other ballparks in the league. It's the impact of the team's ability to hit those doubles.
But if you want a guy who's not going to be a power hitter and just going to be a regular hitter, you want them to hit basically just over the heads of the infield.
That's not going to do much. Jump as high as he can,
and the ball will go right over his mitt.
But that... The guy at third get the guy who so say if that happens out to second base, and you'll see this a lot, is the right fielder who's already coming in on the ball gets it and scoops it up and throws the guy out at second, because the guy at first
not as likely. And if you're going to
the guy at the previous base has to hold up, because if that ball gets caught by the infielder and he's already halfway to second, he's screwed.
Yeah.
The right fielder comes in, picks it up, hits him, because that happens a lot all the time, Gib.
Okay, now if the ball's big scoop, you know, way out there, it still has to wait up. And then most likely, since it's way out there, it has more time for the outfielder to get under the ball, catch it. That's a catch. And it's going to be a guy on first anyway. One guy.
No, because they can usually tag up if it's 330 feet out.
Only if the ball bounces.
No, because you can still tag up if the ball is caught. If it's a line drive and the outfielder's diving.
How many times?
I'm talking about the outfielder. You'll see this at Safeco a lot. Is the outfielder who goes out and dives. The runner easily goes from first to second, second to third, third to home.
It's not as likely as a guy to dive versus just to get under the ball.
Well, that's what I'm not talking about. That when I'm talking about the guys with the doubles, I'm talking about the line drives that shoot off the top of the walls at other ballparks at Safeco Field. Those are line drives that are getting caught by a diving outfielder.
No, I'm talking about
like Mike Trout. What are you talking about?
I was talking about, okay, you got the guy who can hit right over the other, but now and then, yeah, you look at other parts. You guys could hit line drives, maybe bounce off the wall, but still gives more time for the outfield to get under the ball, catch it. Guy sets the tag back, and let's say you're hitting it to right field. Guys, the guy most likely won't tag up at first and go to second because that guy's the right field. You know, that's an easy throw, right? And
but the problem with that, as I said, is once the ball gets down over the guy's head and onto the ground, the right fielder's right there.
Just to run in a lot.
But you usually have time on those little flares like that.
But okay, you can know if it's just gonna be a lob just right over the you know infielder's head. Usually being a guy on the base, you can tell that it's like, hey, that guy's not gonna be able to catch this. I can just straight run to second. That's just a single. Just a single, and the guy moves forward to base, guy on first and second.
But what if the guy gets thrown out and you're going to get frustrated because you're going to be constantly getting guys thrown out? I mean...
What happens to the Mariners anyway? they're being in the same boat as they are in now.
No, because even with the deep flies, at least they're moving guys up freely, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to go from second to third when the ball is 89 feet into the outfield than it is when it's only 120 feet from home plate.
They won't be playing a stealing type game.
You're trained to tag up on those kind of things. And if the ball gets down on the shallow plays, you have to move up. Otherwise, both the runners are out.
Yeah.
You see the problem with that kind of strategy. The idea behind the Mariners, and it was the idea they had when they came in, because they had Edgar and Griffey and A-Rod, was to have two guys who hit 35 to 40 home runs and have the guys like Buehner and Edgar who hit the line, and McLemore and Cammy eventually who hit the line drives, doubles and singles and stuff. And that worked when you had, you know, the veterans and those guys there. But when you've got a young squad like this and you're trying to train them to be like that with hitting coaches that are more have to not only teach them how to swing and work out the kinks in their swing as well as strategize for the starting pitcher, you're going to run into problems, and that's why the hitting coach position has been such a revolving door for the Mariners over the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. The last three, especially because of the youth movement you saw starting midway through the 2010 season. And, you know, they fired Chris Chambliss, their hitting coach, yesterday as a result of how bad the team performed this year. But they're not going to, you know, Justin Smoke went down to AAA, and he's got a shorter, quicker swing now after working with Jeff Pentland, but you're probably not going to see Pentland brought up to work with the guys at the major league level because they've already tried him at the major league level and he couldn't do the scouting part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he could work on the slings. Anyway, enough on Safeco. You have a blog, you have an account on the blog, Gib. You can write your opinion. I've written mine. That's fine.
Yep.
We can have multiple people covering multiple things. If you want to do that, go ahead. Before we go to break, let's talk about the new element we're going to be adding to the blog here real quick.
Okay.
So, what are you going to be covering primarily? Obviously, you can talk about whatever, just like any of the other offers, but what are you going to be...
About my main focus?
Yeah.
Right. Well, so, yeah, as me and Neil here, we got together, we put a flag football team together. With, of course, it's all my roommates. I live with six other guys, and we all put a team together. It's 7-on-7 flag football here at school, and we have a total of 11 guys on our team. Neil's one of them.
I'm probably the slowest and most athletic of them.
Yeah, he's still going to play. Don't worry. You'll get your playing time. I'm just there to have fun. Yeah. We're all here to have fun, and, you know, we get to be kind of competitive at it, and if our team becomes undefeated, we get to move up to competitive, which is our goal. And
so,
our team is the Vanilla Gorillas, so I'll be posting up our stats. You know, I'll probably make a roster of
recaps
positions,
and stuff.
Recap, talk about our games. And I don't know if you've known this, Neil, but in our league, so we play at 6 o'clock Sundays at the Valley Road Playfields, and in our league is Michael and Lucas's team.
Oh, really?
Yep. So
we'll kick their butts.
It'll be like our one game of the week, or one game that will not be serious at all because they're another group of our friends have to play.
No, it'll just be us screwing around. There's going to be so many flags in that game. Anyway, so
that's my cover, flag football.
And you'll also, you know, feel free if you see something you disagree with on the blog.
Oh, of course.
Opinion-wise, to go ahead and do that. Write a post about it, as I was saying earlier.
And
but the flag football gives us an excellent transition into our next topic, the Seahawks, and the resurgence of the NFC West. It'll be fun.
It will be.
You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. Stay tuned.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. Open your eyes. Look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Anyway the wind blows, doesn't really matter. Just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama,
just gotta get out.
You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. So how about those Seahawks, Gib?
Well, how about them? They lost last week by 19-13 against St. Louis.
I wasn't really
expecting that, to be honest.
I was talking with Victor about it, and I'm like, I think this is going to be the kind of year where the NFC West goes 1-1 against every team. 1-1, so the Seahawks will go 1-1 within their division because you have the home and away. So they'll go 1-1 against the Rams, Saints, and 49ers, 49ers against Seahawks. I think it's going to be the year where everybody finishes at 500 in the league. Within the division, against the division opponent.
St. Louis beat Arizona last night, right?
Well, I'm saying they'll go, because you have two games against each opponent, so that's six games. So I'm thinking they're going to go 3-3. You're going to win all your division home games and lose all your divisional road games. Because that's just how the division looks like it's going to shape up this year. And then the division's just going to make hay by beating everybody else in the league.
Right now we're 0-2 in our division.
We're 0-2, but we've been on the road for both of those games.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's the kind of year where against your division opponent, you're going to only win.
When you're home. That's actually very, very likely.
And then, you know, make hay against the rest of the league.
I feel like the NFC West also is one of the strongest divisions now in the NFL.
Oh, no, I completely and utterly agree with you.
Oh, yeah. Except for everyone thinks the Seahawks suck. It's not true.
We did demolish your beloved Cowboys and pretty much made Aaron Rodgers sit down.
Yeah. And literally made him sit down. He ate 8 sacks that game. I agree with you that this year for that NFC West could be like that everyone goes 500 against each other. Now we're a very strong conference. It's gonna be very competitive in our conference to see which one of us goes to the playoffs.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be. I think you're gonna see probably two teams from the NFC West, possibly three.
Can we get three in there?
If they get the wild card spot, you take up the two wild card spots. I mean, it's theoretically possible. You know, you get the division winner plus two wild card spots that are available to anybody. The best records outside of the division winners.
Could be.
It's theoretically possible.
I already have a feeling that.
But I mean, you probably will see two NFC West teams in there. Very unlikely, but you very well could.
I think
see
it could
three.
Be the Arizona and Seattle.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if Seattle and Arizona, even the Rams, because they did stuff RG3.
They did.
And the White Redskins.
And they even shut down Seattle's offense.
Yeah. I mean, it's the media is going to hate them. Hate the West because it's a defensive division and the media loves offense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the NFC West is probably, in my opinion, looking at how the games have gone so far and who the teams have beat and the statistics and stuff, the NFC West is the best division in the NFL.
I agree. Completely.
People seem to forget the phrase that defense wins championships.
I mean, yeah, if you look at it, see, Seattle's already beaten Green Bay and Dallas. Arizona's, I'm drawing a blank here. I'll skip them. But St. Louis has already beaten Washington. They beat Arizona. Even though they're in our league. I haven't paid much attention to the 49ers.
They beat the Saints. No, they beat Green Bay.
Yeah, 49ers also beat Green Bay.
They beat Detroit.
Yeah.
And they beat... Who else did they beat? Brett Gleason, help if you're listening. I'll tweet at him. He's a big 49er fan.
Let's see. Oh, Jesus. Well, San Francisco goes to Buffalo this week, and that's going to be a win. You could basically already tell. And
let's see. There.
Yeah, well, Arizona's already beaten Florida. Or Miami, sorry. I don't know why I said Florida. And they beat New England and Philadelphia.
Those are New England, especially, is a strong team.
Yeah.
And they always are. They're always going to be.
Yeah. I mean, Brady's a great quarterback. But the phrase, people seem to, as I said earlier, people seem to forget the phrase, defense wins championships.
Oh. And, you know, Seattle has one of the best. Ooh, nice. Seattle has one of the best, has actually, I think, the second best defense in the league right now.
Yeah. They like to get pressure and stuff, and it'll look. That's going to be their huge advantage, is the fact that they can. They have one of the stoutest front. They have the best run defense in the game. And if you use those linebackers and those defensive linemen who are good at stopping the run and use that them to pursue the quarterback, you're more often than not going to end up stuffing offensive drives, whether it be a sack, a fumble, an interception because of a lack of time, or, you know, a pass thrown away. Okay. You know, that's what the Husky defense did to Josh Nunes, is they blitzed the heck out of him and made him throw bad passes. Just another example.
I'm sorry, real quick. So I'm looking, you know, at all the NFC West guys and how they're doing. And I didn't realize that San Francisco beat New York, the Jets, last week, 34-0.
Yeah.
However, San Francisco hasn't really won against strong teams. That they only beat Green Bay, Detroit, and New York. And they lost to Minnesota.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I mean, things. It's the NFL. The NFL's unpredictable. But I'm honestly of the opinion that this is going to be the year where you're going to probably see another NFC West representative in the Super Bowl. I mean, we've had, the Cardinals and the Seahawks. I think the Rams went in the early 2000s as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this century, I can think of three teams off the top of my head from the division that's been in the Super Bowl. I mean, yeah, they had a couple down years, 2009.
I don't think Rams made it in this decade.
Was it 99?
I don't even remember last time Rams were in, so, you know, you'll know it better than I will.
I got to pull that up now because it was the greatest show on turf with Warner and Falk.
That might be early 90s or really early 2000s, sorry, not early 90s. Early
2000s. That's why I said this century, not this decade. There's only been three Super Bowls for this decade.
Besides the whole NFC West thing, Seahawks are taking
on. The game was played January 30th, 2000. They made it. It was for the 99 season, though.
Yeah.
So.
Very long time ago.
You know, but they did make it in the Super Bowl this decade. This century.
All right, so. Questions, you know, since we're on the Seahawks and everything. The Seahawks are going against Carolina, at Carolina, this weekend.
How's Carolina's defense?
Carolina's defense, I think, are, you know, Carolina's really just not that strong. They said they're 1-3. The only game they've won was New Orleans, and New Orleans is what, 0-4 right now.
Yeah.
That's not that confident. They lost to Tampa Bay, and it was a close game, 16-10, and then lost another close game to Atlanta. And Atlanta's also been very strong.
They're 4-0, aren't they?
Atlanta?
Yeah.
No, I think they're 3-1 because they lost to Carolina. Or no, so they beat Carolina.
Yeah,
no,
4-0. Right.
Atlanta is 4-0. Atlanta, I think, is the last team left that's undefeated. I believe. And they go against kind of an easier game this week.
They're 11th in rushing yards allowed. I don't know, that's rushing. Okay. Opponent passing yards, their defense is atrocious. They're giving up 134.8 yards on the ground and 259 yards through the air.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is Atlanta and Houston are the last two teams.
But Atlanta's the only one in the NFC.
And Houston's the only one in the AFC.
Houston looks good.
Yeah, they are surprising a lot of people, especially me. However, they are in a really bad division. They're in the AFC South, which probably right now is one of the worst in the league, or in the NFL, because, Both Souths actually are probably the two worst in the league. If you look at the standings.
But how many divisional games have these guys played, though, Gibb?
They've all played at least one. And Houston's undefeated in it. Jacksonville's 1-1, and Tennessee's 0-1. Indianapolis is 0-1. In the division. But so, you know, Seattle's taking on Carolina this weekend. Carolina, they're not looking a strong unit. They have a good quarterback with Cam Newton. But no, what's your take, Neil, on how Seattle will do against Carolina?
Well, Wilson's pretty good for a rookie quarterback. He's a rookie quarterback. He's shown he's not afraid to take chances, but he's also shown brains in doing it, taking those chances. He takes calculated. It's more unlike Connor Halliday, you know, for most of the season, most of his starts. Wilson's shown it's more of a calculated risk, whereas Connor's like, there's my guy. He's got a half a step. I'm chucking it.
Yeah.
Wilson's is more like, okay, that guy's covered, that guy covered, that guy covered. That guy's covered, but he's got an advantage. And if I throw it, you know, if I throw it where only he can get it, and he gets it, good.
Yeah.
If not.
No, I agree. Russell Wilson, he has a great arm. I think he's a good rookie. No, he's not as good as RG3, but he's good. And I feel like we could have a better, you know, receivers, because you look at our first game against Arizona, Russ Wilson's throwing really accurate balls and our receivers are just dropping it, and even happened throughout the St. Louis game, and people are slipping, as you could tell in the last play the Seahawks had, where it was right to him, he slipped, missed to an interception. However, I kind of want to see Flynn, to be completely honest.
I understand that, but Seattle, I think, is probably very notorious for its fan base's wanting of the quarterback. The backup quarterback is always going to be the most popular player on the football field.
The backup quarterback?
Yeah. Everybody wants the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
You're always going to see cries for it, but I think Seattle's pretty notorious for it.
No, okay, so the only reason is that I would want Flynn to play is that I feel Flynn can make, you know, I can't really say, I haven't really watched him, but, you know, he looks like a stereotypical quarterback. I feel like he could make, honestly, better throws than Russell Wilson. However, you know, he won't be able to, I think, get out of the pocket as easy as Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's a short, fast guy. He's like a very good Seneca Wallace. And a lot like Michael Vick. That is just short. And honestly, in interviews with Russell Wilson, he says his height has nothing to do with how good his skill is, but honestly, I think it is. And he has to literally fully extend his arm up to get it over the line. He gets a lot of balls that gets blocked by the line. I think we just need to try flip.
But as we were talking during
a couple of plays, and Carolina will be a perfect game to do it against.
You know what? I think we'll see Flynn for a couple of a drive maybe against Carolina, especially if we go up big.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about bat downs from the defensive linemen. That's a phenomenon that's become widespread in the league this year, and that's because you've seen a transition from the defensive line. A couple of transformations. One, the defense have gotten a lot more aggressive and they're blitzing their linebackers more. Their linebackers are pulling a lot more stuff near the line than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you're seeing defensive linemen just stop being the fat guy that likes to push the other fat guy around. The defensive linemen have turned into these guys who are bigger but not fat, smart, and can read the quarterback just as well as the middle linebacker can.
Mm-hmm.
And they're more athletic. That's probably the biggest difference you're seeing, is these guys can now get up there easier and make the swats.
You were saying
a transformation.
About, like, a lot of the big QBs
A lot of them are getting swatted down a lot more. RG3, who's a skinny stick at 6'3".
Yeah.
You know? They're getting swatted down. Breeze, who's not that tall. Rady, who is. Banning. They're all getting swatted down more, and that's because the defensive linemen are doing more to get in the way of passes.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I I really do feel like it's like maybe even for Russell Wilson that he can like that's gotta be hard for him to see over the line.
I don't doubt
just,
it.
Just slightly. Maybe not a lot, but part where everyone starts getting to the center of the field, you know, you're doing the slants in and posts. Everyone's clumped right there and there's a big wall in front of you. It's gotta be hard to see. I've noticed watching him, Russell Wilson tends to make a lot of throws to the outside. I mean, most QBs do. That's where you want.
Well, yeah, because you don't want the ball getting picked off by a middle linebacker in zone or a defensive end sitting tackle, not the nose tackle or defensive tackle sitting in QB spy. Again, we're talking about the more athletic. You're seeing athletic linemen. You're seeing a lot more QB spies being played by the defense, which is where the defensive tackle basically sits in a mini zone, and his job is to read the quarterback. The quarterback starts to move to one side. His job is to move to that side, same side as the quarterback, to take away the run option.
Yeah.
Or if there's a pass, get in front of the pass and try and swat it down. Or if you get lucky.
Interception. Yeah. When I noticed, when I watched the St. Louis game, our offense, I feel like, just they were not on the money. Our defense, I think, was still really good. St. Louis beat us 19-13. We only gave up one touchdown.
And no.
Two of the field goals St. Louis made were like over 40-something yards, and that's just a good kicker from there.
He was a rookie kicker, and he's making those kicks.
He made a 50 or a 48 yarder.
I think he made a 53.
And a 53, 54 yarder. Not many kickers can do that.
No.
That's just a good kicker. That
it helps he's in the dome.
But our offense could not pull away great plays. You know,
the problem was they took the ball out of Lynch's hand. Yeah. And they tried to make touchdown. Wilson throw the ball. He did. And I mean, they ran for 54. I think I was looking at it, it was like 54. It was 34 attempts for 130 something yards, which isn't horrible.
Yeah.
But several of those yards came on Russell Wilson scrambles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't really.
Russ Wilson's really good at that. He's a fast little guy.
I'm not saying that's not a bad thing. The problem is they tried to make Wilson throw the ball more to try and stretch out the defense. And Wilson right now is still learning the offense. Plus, I can't stand Greg Bevel. I hate his play calling, the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I hate him. Okay, I don't hate him as a person. I hate his coaching style and his, obviously. I just can't stand it. And that's part of the problem is they did take the ball out of Lynch's hands in the second half. And the idea of the Seahawks offense is an offense, even with Flynn, the idea power style offense that Pete Carroll wants to run and that he ran at USC is one that runs the football and play action passes.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept trying to go streaks this, post route that without the play action as much as they need it, or is there Pete Carroll's ideal offense. I think Bevel needs to go.
You think?
I think Bevel needs to go. Even if we get to the playoffs this year, Bevel's got to go. That's my final opinion on it. Anyway, enough for the Seahawks. We got one more break. And then we got Cougar football.
Wait, real fast before we move on. Seahawks-Panthers this weekend.
Scores.
Yes.
Panthers offense is good. It's, you know, 11 and 12. 12th passing offense and 11th rushing offense.
Seattle's
got one of the stoutest rushing defense in the league and one of the better passing defense mm-hmm. as well. 31-24.
31-24?
Thinking we win by a TD.
I like it. All right.
What do you got?
I'm going to guess 17 Panthers because I feel like they might be able to get close enough for field goals. Maybe one or two touchdowns.
Well, that
actually, maybe not even. I think it could be 17 just based off of maybe a touchdown, just, you know, field goals from there on.
Well, that would be 16 then.
That would be 16. Okay, I'll do 16. 16 to 16-28 Seahawks.
16-28 with Seahawks winning. I got 31-24. You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. After the break, we got Cougar football down in Corvallis.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs. You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. Stay tuned. You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. Okay, Corvallis, Gib. Last time the Cougs were in Corvallis, it was 2010, and they won again, and they won big in Jeff Toole's only Pac-12 win as a starter.
And now he's not even going to be there starting.
Nope. Connor Halliday is the designated starter. Now the more I thought about it, I think Leach watched the film. I think Leach decided Halliday was going to be a starter, but Halliday was so hurt from the liver that he got put in such a huge hole from the get-go.
Well, we're talking about QBs real fast. I personally think Tool's better.
I honestly think he is too, but we're not Mike Leach.
No.
So.
Oh, well. I don't wish I was, to be honest. but Mike Leach did announce that Halliday is starting for, you know, tomorrow. But wow, is Oregon State doing very well this year?
Yeah.
Just moved up to the 14th in rankings. It beat Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, UCLA, and Arizona.
Yeah.
For 3-0. They had a great game in Arizona. Arizona's a really good squad. And I think they should still be in the top 25 as well.
But Pac-12 already has like three teams ranked. Four teams.
Huh?
Pac-12.
Six.
Has,
UCLA's back. So it's Oregon, USC, Stanford, Washington.
All ranked
Oregon
in the top.
Oregon State, all in the top 25.
And then
I told you, it's like they're not going to see the Pac-12 because of the, it's like people are like, oh, the Pac-12 after Washington's upset, Pac-12 is going to be so viewed down, so bad. I'm like, no, it's because the Pac-12 had a strong non-conference showing that it's tearing itself apart. It's going to be seen as a strong conference when in reality, the conference hasn't done that much to improve as a whole.
Yeah.
It's
I was actually surprised.
Around the same talent level. The only difference is the rest of the, is that it had a strong non-conference showing this year.
Yeah. Well, so the I was actually very surprised that, you know, UW beat Stanford last week.
Yeah. Very surprised. Victor and I talked about that. It was a shock.
It was a shock. Yeah. I was actually, my neighbor picked me up from the airport when I came home, and the TV, we went out to eat, and the restaurant we were in, the game was on, or in the bar side, and we were out in the restaurant. And my neighbor was like, look, UW's playing. I'm like, yeah, okay, they're going to lose. They're going against Stanford. It's just going to be nothing game. So I was just being cocky, and I was eating, and get off and I look at scores on my phone and I was just like, huh?
I watched it. Me and Victor talked about this. It was shocking, especially with how bad the UW D-line looked.
Yeah.
But, yes, no, there's six teams in the Pac-12, all ranked.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon, Stanford, USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon State. And
so half of our teams.
Yes. We're facing one of those this week. Oregon State, their O-line and D-line are 150% better than they were last year. They're actually getting off their blocks. They look sharper. Mm-hmm. Sean Mannion's being talked about in some circles, a Heisman candidate. 1,000 yards in three games. He's at 1,088 right now.
Damn. Good.
He's a sophomore.
And then you look at, you know, the Cougs who just are just Cougs.
They're just sitting there and they're going, yeah, bitty, going to Corvallis. But if the recent history has anything to suggest between these two teams, at least with the Cougs, with how they played, is the home team won't win. It's happened again with Colorado. We knocked that, we tore their hearts out in Colorado last year, and then they tore our hearts out here in Pullman this year. Blew the holy living snot out of the Beavers in Corvallis in 2010, and last year the Beavers returned the favor by blowing the holy living snot out of us in Seattle.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, if this, like, whole, don't jinx us, Neil, but I know this whole thing just goes, maybe it's just looking good for us if we're, maybe we can have, we can, Cougs can upset someone this year. It's our turn to shine, either that or we can just beat, win the Apple Cup and beat UW and I'll be happy.
Isn't it sad that we're reduced to that for the 10th straight year, beating UW in the Apple Cup and being happy?
Have we lost really 10 years straight?
No, it's been that way the last decade, though. It's like, just beat UW at the end of the year and we'll be good.
Yep.
As fans.
No one likes UW, so. Besides UW. Nope. I probably won't watch much of this game this weekend, to be completely honest.
Well, I don't think I even have Pac-12 Network on my TV. I have it at my apartment if you want to come watch, but you have your girlfriend coming over, right?
Yeah, she's coming.
My girlfriend's still home.
Oh.
Sad days.
Well, how far our house left? Nick, so, you know, Brian, Nick, Alec are gone.
Oh, yeah, you guys are now. So it's just going to be Tommy, Evan,
and Tommy's girlfriend,
and the girls.
Tommy's girlfriend's getting here in like a half hour. Originally, it was going to be Tommy and I. Only. And then Michelle was coming with Tommy's girlfriend. So I was like, I don't want to be the third wheel. So I called Jen. I was like, hey, can you get a day off of work so you can get 2 days straight? And he goes, okay. She was okay. And now she's coming over. So it's going to be just us four. And then Evan changed his mind about going home because he has to work last second. And same with Bryson. Bryson was going to go out camping last second. Now he's staying. So now it's just six. And well, Bryson has a little girl that he's
working on.
Hopefully she comes over.
That'll be fun. Yeah. Anyway, so you guys you'll probably out be doing something fun instead of watching the game. The game's at 3.
I could see if Jen would want to come over Saturday night.
Yeah,
because
Victor and I get lonely.
Yeah.
It's just us and then the ginger girl. Yuri sits in his room. Oh, she's working. She doesn't listen to this.
Yeah.
Should come over and watch the game. It's 3 o'clock.
If we don't have it on our TV, then I'll see if everyone else wants to.
It's, you know, your TV isn't, sure, your TV is huge, but it isn't
HD. It's not HD. I trust. Like, I get very mad watching the games. I was like, this isn't HD.
And I have HD.
We have HD channels, and so we go to the HD channels, and it's not HD. It's better than normal cable, but
well, yeah.
The little TV I have in my room and the medium-sized TV in Tommy's room, those are both HD TVs. So at least my video games get good quality.
Well, as for the game, you know. Yeah, you can come over and watch it. We have the little 37-incher HD. It's nice. Anyway, Sean Mannion and two of the best receivers in the country. In the country, not just the conference, because these guys will get burn anybody against the poorest secondary of Deion Buchanan, Tyree Toomer, Nolan Washington, Casey Locker.
What happened to Casey Locker, may I ask? Last year, he actually was quite well. He had huge hits, and
he couldn't cover Oregon State. He couldn't cover worth crap. He can't cover worth crap. He's just the guy that goes, boom, here's your wood.
Yeah.
Boom, here's your wood. That's all he's good for.
Yeah, he kind of just waits for the catch, and then goes, all right, now I can do something.
Now I go, pretty much. It's very entertaining to watch, but.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't know. Casey Locker's interesting.
So, yeah, one of the best offenses.
One of the best passing offenses in the country versus one of the worst secondaries in the country. Gibb, score, go.
A lot too little.
I think it's going to be closer just because Washington State likes to play to the level of the competition,
yeah,
as was evident by Colorado and the Oregon game.
I think I could guess, like, I bet it's going to be close to the Oregon-Wazoo game, score-wise.
For the three wins Oregon State has, the combined difference between the scores is 13 points, all added up for three wins.
Well, I'm talking
that's
about
that's less than 4
Oregon
points
Wazoo
a game.
You know, that was
but I'm telling you that the margin 20 of victory is less than 4 points a game for Oregon State. So their defense isn't like
the best.
Super spectacular. Their secondary is mediocre too.
But I feel like Oregon State's going to score a lot.
Oh no, they will. So will we probably, hopefully.
All right.
Hopefully Connor continues to improve and stop making porous decisions.
44-21, Oregon State.
So last year's score.
Was that last year's score?
Uh-huh.
Wow, I just picked two numbers at the top of my head. So yes, last year's score.
I'm thinking, I think it'll be closer. I think Oregon State will pull away late. I'm thinking 44-28, 44-31.
All right.
Token field goal somewhere in there.
Okay. That'll Oregon be good. State. So we're only separated by... how good, like we have like the same score for Oregon State, and just
yeah,
depends how good Halliday and
Halliday continues to improve and learn from his mistakes. You're listening to Sports with Neil on Cougar College Radio. Thank you guys for listening. Up next is political talk show I Tend to Rant with Orion. Stay tuned for next Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Maybe, hopefully, we'll see if either of them are available, Bill Moose or President Floyd Zen.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs. Go Hawks. Woo!
When I walk on by, girls be looking like they be fly. I pick to the beat, walking down the street in my new the freak, yeah. This is how I roll, animal print pants out of control. It's red food with the big ass bra, and like Bruce Lee, I got the clout, yeah. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that.